Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. On the program today, we'll be talking about the childhood cancer advocacy organization, Mira's Movement. Mira's Movement was founded in honor of Mira Brower, who died in April of 2008 at the age of 4 from unforeseen complications for treatment to prevent the return of a brain tumor. My guests are Mira Brower's mother, Christine Brower. She's co-founder and executive director of Mira's Movement, and John McCain. He's founding and current member of the Mira's Movement Board of Directors. And I welcome you both to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Christine, let's begin with you. Tell us a little bit about Mira. Tell us about why you started this organization in honor of your daughter.
Well, there's a lot I could say about Mira. She was a pretty amazing kid. But for the purposes of this conversation, I'll talk a little bit about her experience with childhood cancer.
Uh-huh.
So Mira was diagnosed 1 week before her second birthday with a very aggressive brain tumor. And it had become symptomatic just a few weeks before that, actually on Christmas Day.
What were some of the symptoms?
Well, some of the very typical symptoms of a brain tumor are headache, and so complaints of head pain, vomiting, and balance issues.
Uh-huh.
And she exhibited all of those very early on, and then it was just a matter of sorting out what was causing them.
Mm-hmm.
So she had a CAT scan a week before her second birthday, and we found out what was causing those symptoms. And she was in surgery the next day. Was in surgery for 10 hours for a major brain tumor. And was in the pediatric intensive care unit on her second birthday, which is not something I would wish upon anyone or their child. So it was a long road. She had that major surgery. She had high-dose chemotherapy for 5 months. We then took her to NYU for another brain surgery to try to remove the residual tumor, which was very successful.
Mm.
She then had another round of high-dose chemotherapy and a stem cell transplant. She then went through IMRT, which is intensity modulated radiation therapy, for almost 2 full months every day.
Wow.
We then took her to Sloan Kettering for another layer of radiation of sorts, intrathecal monoclonal antibody radiation, which is radiation that's injected through the head, basically, and circulates through the CSF. And that was a measure to try to prevent the cancer from coming back. So she was in treatment for 15 months total initially. She had been declared cancer-free after about 13 of those months.
Hmm.
So we were feeling very hopeful. She had had a lot of complications, though, from her tumor and her treatment. She had a trach from week one, which is a very complicated thing to have a trach.
I'm sure it was uncomfortable for her as well.
I don't think that she noticed it much.
Really?
A little bit. And certainly taking care of it was irritating to her. I think it was harder for us as her parents to watch her have those interventions.
Yeah.
But two-year-olds just are amazing at taking life as it comes, which is a real gift when you have a brain tumor.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Just full of energy and just life. Yeah.
That's right. So she had a feeding tube from week one, and she didn't walk for 9 months. So she had some pretty major complications.
Wow.
But every day that she was feeling well at all, she would have therapies, and she made progress in her recovery. So after 9 months, she did walk again. She walked across her brother's bedroom floor and said, "Mommy, I'm walking again."
Oh, that is so great.
She knew exactly what she had accomplished, and she was an amazing kid.
Uh-huh.
And a month later, she was climbing on the cargo nets at the YMCA in Rochester. So she went from not walking to walking really, really well.
And just being a normal kid in some way.
Yeah, the strength of will is amazing.
So what happened then?
Yeah, well, she was cancer-free for about 9 months, in which time she continued to make great progress. She had her trach removed. She started eating some pureed foods after about 6 months of swallowing therapy. She started pre-K. So lots of normalcy started to come into her life, and she really started to live like a normal three-year-old. But on her fourth birthday, she was symptomatic again with the return of her brain cancer. So the next day we were at Rochester and doing MRIs and all of that. And 3 weeks later, she was in surgery again at NYU, and again, they did a great job, got the whole tumor out. But now we were in a new land, which was land of recurrence.
Yeah.
And once you have a brain tumor that comes back, even though you did everything you possibly could the first time around, you know that it's going to keep coming back.
Is that what they told you?
Well, yeah. With Mira's type of tumor, an ependymoma, a grade 3 ependymoma, which is the aggressive form, That's the reality, is if it comes back in the same location that it was in the first occurrence, and you maxed out on the chemotherapy and the radiation, and you're in a situation where the cancer is going to keep coming back. So it's a question of how to try to get ahead of it. Some children, you know, they successfully stay ahead of it and the cancer doesn't come back, but it's constant management of that situation.
Yeah.
So what we decided for Mira at that point was to put her on a treatment called anti-angiogenesis. It's a blood vessel growth inhibition treatment. Since she didn't have any tumor left, we were actually in sort of an ideal situation that we weren't trying to fight a cancer per se, but to try to keep it from coming back. And it was supposed to be smooth sailing, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
And 3 weeks later, we lost her.
Wow, that fast.
Very quickly. She started treatment at the end of March that year, 2008, and we really thought it was going to be easy. We didn't expect any complications. But, you know, what I've sort of come to for myself, what I've sort of decided for myself is that she was just very heavily pretreated. Her body had taken quite a blow the first time around.
Yeah.
And, you know, high-dose chemotherapy, stem cell transplants are very, very toxic things.
Yeah.
And her body just hadn't rebounded enough to handle that next level of treatment.
Yeah.
And there just really wasn't any way of knowing that, probably on a qualitative or quantitative level,
mm-hmm.
for her when they decided to move forward with that treatment. So, unfortunately, there's a lot we don't know about childhood cancer and
absolutely.
How to treat it best.
Yeah. And how to deal with those, you know, vulnerable, still growing bodies.
Right.
That's such a mystery.
Yes.
So tell us why you decided to start this organization. You say on your website that you decided to do this because you found all kinds of gaps in regard to how you dealt with this and were dealt with. Tell us.
Yeah, well, we discovered in our more than 2 years of treatment with Mira and traveling to four different facilities for treatment, and that there were certain supports available to us that were wonderful. Certain financial supports had been made available to us, and some sort of logistical supports. But really the support that we needed the most from day one, wanted the most, was emotional support.
Mm.
You know, in that first week after finding out Mira had a brain tumor, and then she was in the pediatric intensive care unit on a ventilator, and pretty serious situation.
Yeah.
What I wanted most was to talk to another family who'd been through a very similar thing.
And so that's why you started this.
And I never got it.
Ah, so that makes sense to me. That really does seem to be the missing link in healthcare. To tell us, John, why you got involved in this organization.
Yeah, thanks. Happy to. So my story picks up at pre-K at Beverly J. Martin. It happens my son spent 2 years in the same pre-K class, and as a result, I was in the same pre-K room with Jackson, Mira's brother, and then with Mira the next year. So our family can certainly attest to Mira's, what she brought to the classroom, how excited she was to be there. And so as a result, we all sort of shared a lot in common. You know, we're all busy parents. We're all showing up at school, you know, sometimes just within a minute of the bell ringing and trying to get everyone, you know, backpacks and everything ready. So we got to know the Browers through elementary school, and my kids played with Mira, and they were all close friends. So after Mira's death, the talk of starting an organization to really address these gaps that existed that we had talked about and really had questions about, you know, what could we do? So as a friend, and then also having spent years in nonprofit organizations doing communications work and advocating for change, I thought, geez, you know, there's something I can do to help. So that was how it all started.
Wow, that's an amazing story how you guys coalesced and started this organization. So tell us about some of the support that you are offering to the community that wasn't there before.
Yeah, well, you know, we sort of went from our own experience to talking to a larger community about what the needs were, and we knew from meeting so many families along the way that a similar need was being experienced by many others, that they wish they could just talk to another family whose child had the same diagnosis or was in a similar situation. And that lingering question after the fact of, did we know everything we needed to know? Did we do everything we could do? Was an important one to sort of take on. And so we decided what we really wanted to focus on was providing direct support to families as quickly as possible after a child's diagnosis. You know, you go one day thinking your child has the flu or some other, you know, fairly common childhood illness, to the next day finding out they have a life-threatening illness that not a lot is known about. I mean, a lot of these childhood cancers still don't have very high survival rates. And so you can just be plunged into this crazy existence that you really don't have any framework for. And so the objective became to reach families quickly, to share some resources with them, to streamline them for where those families are in that moment, and to connect them with other families who've been through a similar experience.
Mm-hmm. I think that would probably be the most valuable. There's nothing like people who've already gone through it who can help you through that road.
That's right.
With advice and so on. I want to ask you, John, your kids knew Mira, and so how did you deal with having to tell them that she was dying or after she died? Mm-hmm. How did you deal with that?
Well, it's a challenge. I think it's tough. And it's part of the experience of being involved with Mira's movement that's been compelling for me. How do you talk to your kids and how do you talk to everyone in your family about something like that? I think for the kids, it was interesting. There was support at the school. They were talking about it in the classroom.
Everyone really?
Understood Mira's situation, that she was sick, and somewhat about her treatments, because she did come to the house, and there were just little things that kids ask about that you might not notice. You know, Mira, as Christine said, she couldn't eat regular foods like the rest of the kids were having, so she had her certain favorites, and she had special needs around that. And so there was always sort of a conversation about why, you know, why she's different and what her needs were. And I think we tended not to avoid it, but just address it, you know, that...
Perhaps she has special needs.
Yeah, and I think that it, for them, because she was part of their life, it doesn't stick out to them. There's no stigma around it. And they're like, okay, great. And in fact, sometimes it was, well, maybe if I want to try that, or I want to eat, you know, our daughter, Gabrielle, is intrigued, very interested in Mira's experience and what was going on for her. So you sort of get this very interesting childhood perspective of what's going on for someone who's having. Uh-huh. To us, it seems like this really horrifying challenge, and to them they're just experiencing the world in a different way.
Yeah.
That experience also helped me to understand how as adults we can overthink things and get stuck in our own heads about what it's all about and what we should or shouldn't say.
Yeah, I would assume that the experience of watching kids would help you to keep your stress levels at a little bit of a distance if you can.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so the kids don't get upset. Christine, how did you deal with telling your son Jackson about this? How much did he get to know about it, and how much would you recommend people telling the other siblings?
Oh, I don't know that I'd make any recommendations about how people should talk with siblings about, because that's not my expertise, but every child's different, and different in a really big range, so you certainly have to take your child into account, and certainly with something like this, which is, you know, really traumatic, potentially traumatic, professionals should be involved in having those conversations. And when your child's in the hospital being treated for cancer, they're in a pediatric oncology facility, which is not your community hospital. In New York State, there are 4 upstate facilities: Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, and Albany have pediatric oncology units. And those facilities are set up to support families in these ways. So they have child life specialists who are professionals trained to help the children who are in treatment try to understand what's happening to them and try to manage their treatment process, as well as the siblings. Those are the people that helped us early on. An example is, well, Jackson was 3 when Mira was diagnosed. They're just 20 months apart. And so, you know, he was a pretty little guy.
Yeah.
And one of our big challenges was that Mira had disappeared overnight. She had disappeared to a hospital, and she was in an intensive care unit, and 3-year-olds are not allowed in intensive care units, typically. But they did allow us to bring Jackson in after about a week. I guess it was 6 days later that we were allowed to bring him in. And so the child life specialist took pictures of Mira in her bed. She, you know, was on a ventilator. She had about 5 IV pumps connected to her.
That's got to be scary for
it
a child.
It was scary for us. That's right. Yeah, I mean, it was terrifying for us. She did not look like herself.
Mm-hmm.
And so the child life specialist took pictures of her in the bed, and we sat down with Jackson before he ever went into the room and talked to him, showed him the pictures and talked to him about what he was going to see and some of what was going on with Mira. I mean, we couldn't use terminology like cancer, but, mm-hmm. you know, Mira's sick and we're trying to help her get better and things like that. And then it's an ongoing conversation. You know, it's Mira came home 47 days later and was in a similar situation at home. She had a trach and she was on oxygen and humidification and she was tube fed and she was on IV antibiotics. And it was a pretty scary picture at home, too.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Christine Brower and John McCain. They are part of MIRA's movement, an organization to help families with children with cancer. Now, you know what I want to ask you? I want you both to talk about this. Do you find that a lot of the medical profession, because they want to cure and they want to save people, do they give parents false hope in regard to children with major diseases? Is that one of the issues?
Well, it wasn't an issue for us, and I don't know, that's not an issue that I'm particularly focused on, so I wouldn't really be able to speak well to that. But I think in the field of pediatrics, you're talking about doctors who care deeply about taking care of children, and they want to give parents every hope that they can. I don't know that it's false hope. I think every child is an individual, and so with every single child, no matter the diagnosis, there is hope to be had.
And is that what you would pass along to people who come to MIRA's movement?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. You know, the challenge in being a parent of a child with cancer is to find the best options for them, because every child does have hope.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some cure rates for some childhood cancers are like 90% now, but others are still 10 and 15. Mm-hmm. And so it's good to educate yourself about the disease your child has, and be sure to gather information to help you make the best decisions you possibly can, with every hope that your child is going to come out as well as they possibly can.
Yeah. And there are such things as miracles, which we have all experienced.
Yeah, there certainly are. Yeah. I mean, we've heard lots of stories of children who had pretty scary scenarios who are still here with us. And there are always those stories of successes.
Did you want to say anything, John?
Yeah, Tish, I would just add that from the start of the organization, I think that was actually one of the challenges, and what Christine describes in her experience and what we've heard about other families is that, in fact, this is a very intense medical intervention. You know, even when Mira was at home, the requirements she had for medical intervention and nurse aid and support was very intense. And so for a family, understanding that and going through that is definitely a medical experience. And we've tried to consider in starting an organization, I think we've had real positive response, is that what are the aspects of how families can feel supported? Because it can feel isolating. You know, the impression I have, speaking not as someone who's been through the ordeal, but experienced it closely with through Christine's experience, is that the isolating feeling that a family can have, you know, not only are you having to be this busy parent, as I oftentimes describe myself, but you're super, super busy. You're trying to take care of the needs of other children while at the same time take care of the extra special needs of another child. Mm-hmm. And how, in addition to the fact that you're not able to participate in your community the way you had before, how your community responds to you can be really, really critical. And that without some sort of extra support or avenue where you're just hearing from, Christine has actually told stories where just families who receive a gift card that another family has purchased for them, it creates a connection to the community where you feel like, okay, people aren't avoiding me. There's no stigma attached to my situation. It's just that the community needs to reach out and connect with these families.
Yeah. A lot of people are afraid of diseases and afraid of families who are experiencing this.
And even more so when it comes to children.
Mm-hmm. People don't know what to say. They don't know
right.
what to do.
Yeah, it's social awkwardness to the 10th degree. You know, what do you say when someone's child has a life-threatening illness? Uh-huh. And people's capacity to handle that interaction varies quite a bit. Some people just can't have that conversation. Yeah. They feel that they need to be strong in having that conversation. They feel they need to say all the right things, and so they don't have the conversation.
Yeah, so
and my
away.
Message to people would be, say something.
Yeah,
and people will appreciate the effort in saying whatever it is you say. Shed a tear if you need to shed a tear, but say, you know, I'd like to be helpful to you in some way. That is such a gift.
Yeah. I was going to ask you what you would recommend from your experience that people could do.
It's
stay in touch, mainly.
Stay in touch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people just sort of fall out of your life because they don't trust themselves to handle it well, or just maybe they don't even process it on that level.
I'm sure a lot of them are just filled with fear.
Yes, filled with fear. I mean, the experience of the family is often, you know, that childhood cancer feels like a communicable disease.
Yeah.
So it can be pretty rough. And the range of that experience is quite large also. Some families, we had tremendous community support. We had lots of friends from lots of different parts of our lives who wanted to do something for us.
Mm-hmm.
What we were lacking was that piece of talking to a family who had had a child with cancer in a similar situation. And that was an important one that we really wanted to fill.
Yeah.
But the other pieces of people stepping up and saying, what can I do for you? We were not lacking in, and we were so, so thankful.
Yeah. So that's a big part of helping the survivors.
It is.
As well.
Yeah.
Now, I want to talk about the fact that Mira's movement's also involved in advocacy for legislation.
Yeah.
There's a bill called the Childhood Brain Tumor Prevention Network Act. Tell us about it.
Sure. Well, we advocate on a few different levels. We do advocate more generally for increased federal funding of pediatric cancer research. We are a pediatric cancer organization, not just a pediatric brain tumor organization, and we feel very strongly about advocating for all the kids. That more money needs to be spent on the federal level through the National Cancer Institutes on pediatric cancer research. The current level of funding is about $200 million a year.
Really?
Which is a pretty small amount.
That is, in the scheme of things.
Yeah, and when you do a patient-per-patient comparison, which is really the only fair way to look at it, there are a lot of other ways that people talk about what one group of cancer patients gets versus what children with cancer gets, and there are not a lot of fair comparisons except patient by patient. And kids with cancer get about 25 cents on the dollar to the adult cancer population.
And it does have to do with advocacy, does it not?
Yes.
I've heard people say the breast cancer, you know, advocacy
yeah,
around the country.
They've been incredibly successful.
Exactly.
Kudos to them. I mean,
exactly.
We really want all of our patient groups to be as successful as the breast cancer group. And that's what it comes down to is we want all of our needs to be met. And certainly kids, the average age of diagnosis is 6.
It's unbelievable.
And so when we lose a child to cancer, which is 22% of the time, you know, the years of life lost are 66 years of life lost. It's an incredible loss.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And the frustrating thing for all of us who know a little bit about these issues is that there is money out there.
There is money out
That's
there.
That's what's so frustrating.
Yeah,
that
it's about making choices about how to spend it.
Yeah, I hear people constantly say, end the wars, and then let's take care of some of the major matters that we have in this country, including children's health and so on. Do you want to add anything to the legislation aspect of Mira's movement?
I mean, I think I would agree that we face an enormity of scope on lots of levels. So just grappling with individual families and what they go through from a medical experience, and then when you actually think about, well, how are we going to solve this, and thinking about federal research funding and appealing for support, not only at the federal level, maybe even the state level, it's an additional challenge for an organization to think at that level. And the effort to get the legislation, the bill written and supported, and just continue to push that forward is something we hope to continue to do and keep the action up. It's been a frustrating few times for extraneous legislation.
This has been a difficult Congress to work on.
I'm sure it is. But I was going to ask you, how do you do it? Do you actually have a lobbyist, or you, Christine Brower, doing this by yourself with John
McCain? Christine Brower, and those that support
people
us.
People on the board?
Yeah, engage in the activities. And so I make the trips to D.C. periodically to talk to people that need to be talked to. But we do most of our work over the phone and email, of course, because it's not very practical for us to go to D.C. too regularly.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the current, you know, issue is just keeping the message out there. The bill that we've been working on most actively, the Childhood Brain Tumor Prevention Network Act, was introduced initially in January of 2009.
Mm.
It was sponsored by Senator Schumer and Senator Vitter in the Senate and Congresswoman Lee in the House, and gained a little bit of traction. We were competing with health care reform. It was a pretty rough time to be trying to get something done. And now in this Congress, we're competing with anything that requires an appropriation. And so
anything that requires attention.
Yeah, and the reality is this appropriation, you know, we're asking for $25 million a year for 5 years is such a small amount of money.
It is.
And it could
that.
Make such a big difference. We're really just hoping to fund research into the causes of childhood brain tumors, because the progress has not been made in treating the tumors better. in the past 20 years, the survival rates have gone up very little.
Yeah, I've
and
never
so
heard that.
It makes sense for us to turn our eye towards prevention rather than trying to stay on this hamster wheel of coming up with some better treatments for a huge range of types of cancers that are included in the brain tumor category.
You know, I was reading up on this issue, getting ready to talk to you guys, and I was amazed to find out that most children are diagnosed with either brain tumors or leukemias. That's the cancers that we're facing with young children.
Yes.
That's just amazing to me.
Yeah, leukemia is the most common diagnosis. Brain tumors as a category are the second most common, and brain tumors have moved into the leading cause of death by childhood cancer because of the lack of progress being made on treatments.
Now, do we know, can we talk a little bit about it? Is anybody speculating about what the causes are, environmental?
Lots of people are speculating.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There's always people out there speculating.
Yeah, but what, is there
it's
anything
not
concrete?
Something we focus on as an organization. Of course, as the mother of a child who had cancer, one of the first questions you ask on day one is why?
Yeah.
Why did my child get a brain tumor? And every family asks themselves that question.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, personally, it's something that I've cared about and done some reading on. But there's other organizations out there that are more focused on this, more focused on what the causal factors of cancers in general and childhood cancers might be, talking about them and trying to even persuade some legislation around those things.
Mm-hmm.
Healthy Child, Healthy World is a great organization that talks about family health and environmental issues. Safer Chemicals, Safer Families is an organization that's working on toxic chemical reform, and part of their belief around that legislation is that more chemicals in our environment are causing more cancers.
Mm-hmm.
So those are organizations that are much more focused on that issue and have a lot to add to the conversation. I would encourage people to look to them for more information.
Well, you know, we only have a couple minutes left. I want to talk to you just a little bit about this initiative that I read about. It's called Change for Children's Cancer. What is that?
Well, it's a simple campaign that we started over the summer, and we hope to expand it in the future, which is a simple concept of inviting people to donate the change left over from a purchase to help kids with cancer. And so we launched it in about 20 local businesses here in Ithaca, and we look forward to broadening it to the full region that we support. We support families being treated at both the Syracuse and Rochester pediatric oncology facilities. So that covers about 37 counties of New York State.
Wow.
And
that sounds like a great initiative.
Yes, thank you. Uh-huh. So it's to raise awareness of the issue. I mean, you know, if people see an invitation to support the cause on their local cash register counter, it'll raise awareness of the issue. And that's always at the crux of everything we're doing, is to make people understand the prevalence and the impact of childhood cancer.
And can you give some contact information if somebody wants to get involved?
Yeah, well, you can find us at mirasmovement.org on the web, and our contact phone is 607-319-4804. We're in downtown Ithaca, but we serve all of Central New York, so we can go to the families diagnosed once they get in touch with us.
Great. Well, thank you both so much for joining us. Again, this was John McCain and Christine Brower from Mirrors Movement. What a great organization. Thank you so much for joining us, and good luck.
Thank you, Tish.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.